Radim Simcha World, today's daf in Masechet Sota, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKadesh, is daf Yud Beit. And we were just discussing the relationship of Kolev, and how did we get into Kolev and Miriam? Because we found that her name was called Ephrat. And from Ephrat, we learned that Ish Ephrati means that she was also an ancestor of David HaMelech. And we were trying to prove that the Nas Batim had to do with Batei Malchus and Batei Neviyah. So we've come some way over here, popping down into an examination of the relationship of Kolev ben Yefuneh and Miriam. So we got up to the two dots, three lines up from the bottom of Yud Aleph Amud Beis. And let's take a look at the strange psukim that we have been Nogea Kolev. Now, remember, what we're going to be doing now is learning psukim in Divrei Hayomim. And I remember, as the Gemara says elsewhere, Kol Dvarecha Echadim, we know all about the way that you hide your real meanings in Divrei Hayomim, and you give a lot of names that are all the same person, that are meant to be a gilui of different inyanim, that are hidden in terms specifically of the way that Klal Yisrael develops in the end to the Malchus, and speaks about historical events in ways that hide them. And so the most strange understandings in the Gemara of the nature of names always goes back to the understanding of Divrei Hayomi. Okay, so we spoke about, in the beginning, the idea of Azuva and Ephrat. Let's take a look about the relationship of Kolev and Miriam that we find scattered throughout Divrei Hayomi. So here it says, V'cholev ben Chetzron, olid et azuva isha, ve'et yiriot, ve'elevaneh, yesher, v'shovav, v'ardon. Now, we don't know. I mean, these people are basically not known in history. And we know that Kolev is not Kolev ben Chetzron. Kolev is ben Yefuneh, whenever else we mention him. And over here it says, holid et azuva isha. I mean, is she a wife or is she a daughter? So this is the way we understand. Ask the Gemara, first of all, who is Kalev ben Chetzron? If all over, he's always known as Kalev ben Yefuneh. Ah, that, says the Gemara, he's called ben Yefuneh only because he was Panami at Sat Meraglim. But his real father was Chetzron. And that's why we call him here Kalev ben Chetzron. So Yefuneh means to turn aside. Says the Gemara, but even that doesn't make any sense, because he wasn't a ben of Chetzron, because we know that he was related as a brother to Otniel, which is, of course, Moshe Wolshinsky's favorite person in Tanakh. And as a brother to Otniel, since Otniel was ben Kenaz, so then he must also be a ben Kenaz, because it says Beferish, this is Kiryat Sefer, which we know that Yoshua offered this amazing gift to anybody who would go and be able to be conquering the city of Kiryat Sefer, which the Gemara Darshans means that he learned the Sifri and all in one day and so on. But in any event, so Kiryat Sefer, who ends up with Achsa Biti Lisha, so this is Osniel ben Kenaz, who's called the brother of Kolev. So then he must have been a son of Kolev. Omar Rava, no, it doesn't necessarily mean he was a son of Kolev. He might have been a stepson of Kolev, because suppose he was the brother of Osniel ben Kenaz through a common mother, right? So then he would still be the brother of Osniel. And as a matter of fact, we do find in Yoshua that that Kolev is not called Ben Kenaz, he's called Haknizi. It's a really strange way of referring to a person's family, a Knizi. So why would we refer to Kolev Ben Yefuneh Haknizi? Okay, so we're talking about Kolev, who is the one who is Ponem Yatzas Baraglim, but who is not the son of Kenaz, he's just a Knazi kind of type, which means that he grew up in the family of Kenaz. So we call him like part of the tribe, so to speak, of Kenaz. But he wasn't really a son of Kenaz, so that makes it clear. Shema mina that he was a stepson, so it was Chorgo de Knaz. That makes him a half-brother to Otniel. Now, it says over here that he took this Azuva Isha, but wait a minute, he had married Miriam. Why do we call her Azuva? So Miriam was very sick when she was younger, and she apparently had tzaras even before. If we add up the years, it turns out that this couldn't have been the tzaras we were referring to later on in the Midbar. Everyone had given up on her. Nobody wanted to marry her, because nobody wanted to marry a sickly girl. And he was the one that ended up marrying her. Now, why does it say that he gave birth to her if it says that she is the Isha? Valo min savavi nasivla. Because it says, Vatomot Azuva, remember, and then Vayisa Kalev et Efrat. That was the beginning of our whole understanding of the relationship. So then Azuva was his wife. So what's going on? Omer Rabbi Yochanan. This is because Kalanosei Shalashim Shamayim Ma'alel Avakatuv Ki'ilu Yilada. He took Miriam because he wanted to be zeicher to a woman whose children would be like her brothers, because Rova Bani Merdaimim to Achayim. She had pretty decent brothers, I would think, Meshe, Aaron, you know. So Kalei figured, look, what better family is there to get into? Okay, so she's a little bit sick. We'll work on her. You know, you invest in the relationship, and it'll end up working out. So he took her L'shem Shamayim. Remember that we have that same lashon in the Sugya and Tainis, where we talk about Bachur, Sayinecha, and so on, right? So over there it says, you can take her L'shem Shamayim, ubilvad shetatrena bezuvim. I mean, you got to make her look good, and you got to cheer her up, you know? So you got to do whatever you got to do to invest. So the investment in a marriage is always in terms of Kalanosi Yisholashim Shamayim. And therefore, the Torah considers him as having recreated her. So it's as if he gave birth to her, turned her into a whole new person. And then it calls her Yiriot. Well, I mean, Shazuva, Yiriot, it's about the same thing. Now we're domim le Yiriot. You know what she looked like when she was sick? She looked like the material on those curtains, you know, those yellowed curtains that looked like really, really bad shape. They've been there for 50 years, you know, they're all worn out. Well, that's exactly what her face looked like. Not exactly an attractive, blushing young girl, you know, with a lot of blood in her skin. And he took her anyway, even though she was like Yiriot. And then when it says, Ele Baneha, not familiar with Yesher, Shovav, and Ardon, these are not Baneha. These are all references to Kalev. Why do we call Kalev her children? That's fascinating. So first we say, it's as if he gave birth to her. And then we say, Kalev is Boneha, because Kalev was Boneha. Kalev was the one who recreated her, built her up from nothing. So what did that mean? So first of all, Yesha. Now, why is he called? Kalev is called Yesha. Rashi learns that all of these Ramazim are Ramazim to the amazing things that Kalev had done for himself in rejecting the Atzas Amaraglim. We've talked about many times how difficult it was to resist the Atzas Amaraglim, even though we don't understand that. But we know that Yoshua wasn't able to do it without the Baruch of Meshe Rabbeinu. The only one that actually stood up on his own against the Atzas Amaraglim was Kalev. So Rashi learns that all of these words are names for Kalev because of that. Others try to make it fit in with the story, right? Because if we're going to be talking about exactly his relationship with Miriam, so why would we stress the things that he did with the Meraglim? So then, according to others, these are inyonim, which was Mizgaber on his Yetzirah from taking a beautiful wife that he could have had anybody that he wanted, and expressing his relationship specifically with a woman who was somebody that no one else would ever be interested in. That was Azvua. That's why we menat chas v'shalom to be misaper in the problems of Miriam, but we want to understand who Kalev was, that he took an Azuva, a woman that no one would look at, and he was the one who was Bonel. Okay, but Rashi's pshat over here is we call him, first we call him Yesher. Why? Because he was Minyasher at Atatzmo from going after the Meraglim, or from going after, according to others, other women. Shovav Sheshivev et Yitzro. So he was Moreid, basically, against his Yitzhara, and he acted like a wild kid. You want me to do what you want me to do, and I'm going to do what I want to do. So he was basically a teenager in the opposite, right? So he used the same kayach of a child who is shovav. Usually we refer to when you follow your Yitzhara. He used that wildness that was always part of Kalev. He used that wildness to fight his Yitzhara. It's a beautiful idea. And that way he wouldn't go with the other Meraglim. And Ve'ardon, so we're gonna understand this not only as Ardon, but as Vardon. So as Ve'ardon we'll put together. So Ardon, some learn that it means that he was Rada. He was the guy that he ruled it over his Yetzer Hara. Again, question of whether that wanted to turn him after the Meraglim, like Rashi learns, or it's Meramis to Inyonim of his desire for other women, instead of following his understanding that he's going to marry this tough woman, Miriam. But some say that actually he's called Vardon because he changed Miriam from Yiriot into a Veret. And so because of that, that beauty of the rose that was reflected in Miriam became part of his identity, that he had achieved that in Miriam. So we called Kolev Vardon. That's if the Girsa is Panea. I mean, some change it, but okay. Now, there's another pasuk also referring to Kalev and Miriam. And this time, it changes everybody's name because it says Ashchor, who was Ashchor, really, who is Avi Tekoa, had two wives, Chela and Naara. So first of all, who is Ashchor? Ashchor is Kalev. And the only reason we called him Ashchur was because of the way that he had made so many ta'aniyot not to fall into the atzata miraglim, that he was literally hushuru panav betaniyot. He looked so sick and blackened in his face from all of the ta'aniyot that he kept to be saved from that etza. And it says over here that he was the husband of these two people. So what do we call him? Avi Tekoa. So what does that mean, Avi Tekoa? This is a reference to a person who was taka et libo, le'aviv shebashamayim, and he is called Avi because he made himself like Miriam's father, like we saw before. And this is, he did this by being taka et libo, le'aviv shebashamayim. Again, according to Rashi, this connects the Maisa HaMeraglim, which he was Omid Kenegdo, to Miriam in mysterious ways. Because we keep, according to Rashi, referring to his relationship to Miriam as part of his ability to fight against the Meraglim, so that the two are deeply connected. And obviously, the idea of Miriam, specifically, who was the one who was the Nevi'ah L'chatchila, about Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Knisa L'Eretz Yisrael, and the keeping the Ne'emonos HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Avtacha, is a remarkable way in which a person can retain his loyalty by remaining loyal to Miriam. This is obviously mechuber to the psukim that started this whole discussion, which is that Vatetzatzav Achoto Mirachok L'Dea L'Dat Ma'yeh B'Sof Nevuata. And this is a chibur to total ne'emonos in seeing the future with Moshe Rabbeinu, in making Moshe Rabbeinu the Neitzan HaTorah, in the sense that through her, Moshe Rabbeinu became known as the Onav Mikol Adam, and as the person who was completely ne'emon to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Dvarim, and so on and so forth. So the idea of the retention of absolute ne'emonos, which Kalev becomes the symbol of, even more than Yoshua himself, because we find that Kalev screams at Yehoshua in gentle ways, perhaps, but makes it very clear that he's deeply disapproving of the way that Yehoshua is treating himself like this old man. He says, I ain't nothing but a kid, and I was in my 80s already So I don't know what you're making such a big deal. Why don't you go after it, man, and do it? Take a look at me. I just went after Hebron, you know, no problem. Anyway, so he was called Kolev, as we always understood, because of this incredible ability to put his heart, his kolibai, into everything that he did. And he was always, I ain't nothing but a lad, in which he's always starting mechadash. That was not only the kayach that turned Miriam back into what she was, but it was the kayach that Miriam had given him in order to be able to withstand the Meraglim. So Rashi is taking a very profound approach that the Achronim who argue and say, why should we learn it like that? We're not aware of. And in reality, I think we'd be smart to follow Rashi here. Okay. So this was all referring back to Miriam. So he became like an Av to Miriam, like we saw before, that it was Nechshav Ki'ilo Yelada. And he's called Tekoa in this case, because he was Taka et Libo L'Aviv Sheba Shamayim. Now he had two wives. They weren't two different wives. They were the same person who became so totally different. Notice how this is a theme in our Masechet, even the Gabe Paro, and the reconstruction of a person's personality, which is deeply connected to the idea of freedom, which is Paro's ultimate reconstruction as the Melech of Nineveh, who was the same Paro who was called Melech Hadash, even though he wasn't Hadash. I mean, this is like so thematic here in Sota. So that freedom deeply and the ability for a Sota herself to be Choseret Lenaruta, in a sense, right? Because that's what the Mayim HaMa'orim does to her, restores her fertility exactly as Kolev did for Miriam. And this became the birth of Shmuel himself, remember, because this is what Chana utilized as, you know, you're not going to make your Torah fake out if it says that she drinks the water, she's got to have a baby, and so on and so forth. All of this is Mechaber Dinyanim of Ne'emanut to reproduction, to the Schus of Nashim Tzidkoniyos in Mitzrayim, to the Inyanim that we were Mechaber at the beginning when we had the Siyam of Nazir to connect it to the Inyanim that we're going to be involved in throughout in Seiteh, what we call the tripartite Masechta. So this is all very, very much part of the understanding that when we say it was two women, that's like saying there were two different Melochim in Mitzrayim, but they weren't two different Melochim. They were Chel Av and Ara, which is obviously Lo Chel Av and Ara. That wasn't their names. Ela Bitchila Chel A. Originally, Miriam was sick, like we saw before. And that's why Azuva. And that's why Yiriot. All of the names are interrelated. And in the end, she was restored to being a Nara, which is what happens to Yocheved. She was Chazra L'Naruta, which is where they all come from, which is what happens to the Sota, which is what happened to Sora Imenu and the entire idea that her skin became restored again and so on and so forth. So she turned into a Nara. And then when it talks about B'nei Chela, so it calls them Tzeret, Tzohar, Etnan. Now, all of these are, again, nothing but other references to how it was that this very B'nei Chela means not the B'nei Chela, but the Binyanim of Chela, meaning the way in which she became expressed in her new versions of Binyan, as opposed to Churban. They were Tzeret. Why were they called Tzeret? Because this woman, who was completely Azuva, and who no one would look at twice, became so beautiful that she was Naseh Tzara L'Chavrotea, that every woman felt the competition of her existence. So they had all been married by their husbands, you know, had rejected Miriam, and like these were all the Gedalim that had married them, you know, and they're on top of the world. And all of a sudden, here's this nobody that we could safely ignore, and we better not let our husbands get even a glimpse at her. So that was the Tzeret. And that's why her next name was called Tzohar, because even though it isn't really Tzohar, it's actually spelled with a chet, and it's not even spelled with a chet, really, because it's Yitzchar is the ksiv. But okay, but we're darshaning Yitzchar as Yitzhar, and Yitzhar itself is an expression of the light that comes from oil. So the idea over there, she's called Soar because she was so bright. It was looking at the bright sky in the afternoon. And that's why we gave her the name Etnan, because any man that looked at her would get so turned on that he had to run and pay his wife for a quickie, because otherwise he would plot. So kol aroeota molichet nan lishto. So he had to go and pay his wife. So that became the way that we refer to her, the exact opposite of the azuva. It's such a beautiful insight into the power of what it is that a wife gives a man and what it is that a man gives a wife in the mutuality of this relationship. Stunning, stunning insight, b'chlal, into the nyanim of saita and loyalty, lack of loyalty, or underlying loyalty. Unbelievable ideas. Okay. Anyway, so now we can get back to Yitzias Mitzrayim, because now that we're back at the sources, so we've spoken about Kolev and Miriam and the way that Rashi's understanding it, this was actually the mocker of the Nemonis of Am Yisrael, was actually because of Miriam and Yocheved and all the things that we spoke about before, and the Schus of Noshim Tzidkoniot. So now we know that it was that commitment to the ongoing life-giving reproduction that was the essence of Yisrael's survival, which brought them back to Avram Avinu's commitment to life itself and to Chesed. That was exactly the thing that the Mitzrim were smart enough to recognize is the most dangerous thing that they have to face. What did Paro do about that? So Vayitzav Paro l'chol amo, after we saw that they analyzed what they can do l'moshiyan shel Yisrael to avoid mida k'neged mida, they kept getting this, I don't know what you want to call it, this magical sense, you know, through the psychic activities of the magicians, where the Itztagnine Paro kept telling him, there's a boy around that's going to be taking Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. This scared the H out of Paro. So he was Bitzave l'kol amo, kol ha-ben ha-yilod ha-ya-orot ha-shlichu. Om Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Hanina. When it says that he was Bitzave l'kol amo, that says Bitzave al-kol amo. So then that means he was even Bitzave his own nation to kill their own kids. Om Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Hanina, af al-amo gazar. So Om Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Hanina, you need to understand there were three stages over here, okay? Shalosh gezerot gazar. First of all, he spoke only to the Mialdot. And he figured he would be able to quietly kill off all of the males, and that that would be safeguarding against a Moshiach of Yisrael that would be taking the Shlichus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the Rambam's Lashon, Asa Moshe Rabbeinu Rabban Shekol Nevin Ushelacha. So if we can get rid of the Shliach, then we'll get rid of Moshiach Shel Yisrael. So if we can catch them before they even make it out of the hospital ward for the old dot, you know, we get all the nurses on our side, we're in good shape. So that's what he started to do. When he spoke to the Ibenu Vamitenoto, he spoke to the Mialdot, he saw that that didn't work. So V'yacharkach kol ha-ben ha-yilod ha-yorat ha-shlichuhu. There, he actually appointed policemen to go around and to find them and so on. Ulebesof, when it was, even when that was not working, and, okay, it could be there was, like we saw that they said that specifically on that day, because Rashi says that, you know, they told him that today, the kid that's going to make us problems, that's the day that he's born, but we can't tell if he is a Mitzri or if he's a Jew. Now, of course, there was a very good reason why they couldn't tell, because Yosef is called a Mitzri. Ha-ha! Right? That's what happens when he comes down to Yitro. He was so thoroughly assimilated with Mitzrayim, having grown up in the castle with Paro, that he was a Mitzri. So how are they supposed to tell the difference? It wasn't clear to them. He had shimmerings of Yisrael in him, but shimmerings of Mitzrayim. He was like the greatest of the Mitzrim, in a sense, right? It was a continuation of what Yosef HaTzadik had done for Mitzrayim, and he was the one who was actually the symbol of Mitzrayim. So obviously they couldn't tell the difference. It's not as if, remember, that the Itztagnine Paro were very exact. They were, had the same problem of being koveya when Chatzos was. That's exactly the point.
Rabbi called himself Mitzri too.
Yeah. Well, Ish Mitzri. He told them he's a Mitzri. That's how we know
he's
a Mitzri.
Yeah.
Fine. So there he said, okay, well, we better get rid of everybody. Now, when we know that it all started with this guy who wasn't given a name right at the very beginning of Sefer Shmos. An Ish mi Beit Levi goes somewhere. Where did he go? He went. What do you mean he went? Vayelech to where? Leichan alach. Omer of Yehuda bar Zvida, when you're Heilech, you can be a follower. You can follow someone's lead. And in this case, it's referring to the lead of his little five-year-old daughter. Back again to Miriam. So this is all really a continuation from that concept of Nashim Sitkaniyas. Halach ba'atzat bito. Tana. What was the story? So Amram, who is called the Ish b'Beit Levi, he was the Godol Hador, and everyone would be following the Godol Hador. Kivan shira'a shamar par'o harasha, kola b'ina yilon haya'ora tashlichuhu. When he saw this gezerah, he says, okay, that's ridiculous. Because when it says, Vayar Hashem et Amaleinu, what's Amaleinu in the Haggadah? Elu HaBanim. So he said, if Paro is now destroying all of our Amaleinu, L'shav Anu Amelim, so all of this work that we're doing in raising a nation is worthless, and therefore, let us quit. Amad V'gireish et Ishto. So basically, he and the rest of Klal Yisrael went on strike. We are no longer going to reproduce for no purpose. Either you get going, God, or we ain't get going. So as we pointed out before, this is amazing. It was tremendous chutzpah. But remember that we find exactly Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, who knows the Shechina, is the one that is Mevarech the Shechina, and he was the one who said that's what we should be doing today, right? So that means that this was a tremendous anhaga, an unbelievable zechus. And where do we see it? We see it by Gidon, who did the same thing with the Shechina. Malach comes, tells him, you know, we're going to be handling these goyim. And like, instead of being very impressed, he says to the Malach, where the heck have you been, you idiot? It's like, what happened to Yetzias Mitzrayim? And instead of punishing him, the Shechina gives him a message, Leich b'kochach hazeh. Exactly, that's the attitude that will end up winning. So that's essentially what Amram did. Everybody went along with him. And komdu kulam v'girshu et neshotehem. So then Amra lo bito, then Miriam says to him, but daddy, kashe gezeratcha yoter mishel paro? Paro lo gazar ala zecharim? Ata gazart ala zecharim v'ala nekevot? Paro lo gazar ala ba'olam hazeh? But if these children are never born, even for a moment, then there is no way that they could come into Olam Haba. The only way to be entering into Olam Haba is through Olam Hazeh. If you're not born, then there's no shaykhus even to have a chelik in Olam Haba. Paro harasha. I mean, Paro says something. Who the heck is Paro? Safek mitkayemet gezerato. Safek eno mitkayemet. But just because Paro says something, we have to take it seriously. But atat tzaddik. Bevadai shegzeratcha bitkayemet, as it says, vatigzar omer vayokom loch, as Eov points out, when a tzaddik is gezer, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mekayim. So something's got to be done. So when he sees that actually it becomes so clear that everything has to be done out of the pure consideration for what Yisrael is, that Kol Yisrael yesh lo chelek le'olam haba, and that's our job, and not the way that we normally socialize our jobs. You know, well, we're all Jews. And No. This, even in the eyes of a five-year-old, become clear that we could be Isaac in this, in complete ne'monas. So then he, amad v'chzirat ishto, amdu kulam v'chzirat nishoteyem. That doesn't mean that it was a mistake, the way people think. V'horaya, Yishmael ben Elisha. Anyway, not only did he take her back? But, again, in keeping with the entire idea of the renewal of personalities and the complete change in the stance of things when they're mischadesh, it doesn't say vayachzir et ishto, it says vayikach. Ask the Gemara, why does it say vayikach? It should say vayachzir. Omer of Yehuda Bar Zvina, because he treated it like the first marriage. Asalam ha'aseh l'kuchin. He made her a beautiful chasana, hired the most beautiful chasana hall, had the nicest orchestra, the best schnapps. It was like it was the first time he had ever married her. Hoshiva ba'apiryon, Aaron and Miriam were there dancing in front of the chuppah, miragdim lefaneha. The Malachi Ashores are there watching the simcha of this chasana. Eim habanim simecha. So this makes the mother of already children, puts her back into the situation of being renewed completely. Moshivi akeret habayit, where all was over, puts her back into eim habanim simecha. And they were mahalal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then it says that the woman that he took was a bat Levi. I mean, it's all very nice to talk about retaking the wife and treating this as if it's your first marriage. But to call her a bat at the age of 130 years, I mean, it's a little bit strange, don't you think? Because we know that she was 130 years old. Because the Omer Rabbi Chama or Rabbi Chanina, we know that we have the problem of the count in the Pasuk that lists 69 people and claims that Kol, all of the Zera to Yaakov that is being Yorid LeMitzrayim, Shivim Nafesh, even though it only counted 69. So, I mean, that's pretty bad Bible criticism. My God, the editors can't even count, you know. Well, why not? I mean, anything's possible. So, what would it mean in which we could have such a statement? 69 people equals 70. Ah, it means that there was someone who was not included in the ones who were born before, and yet were Yordim LeMitzrayim. So how could that be? If the pregnancy was going on the whole time, and then the birth was the instant of the coming into Mitzrayim, then the ones that were Yordim Mitzrayim were 70, but couldn't be listed because she hadn't been born yet. So she must have been born Bein HaChomot, literally between the doorway as they were coming in to Mitzrayim. So therefore, on the Derech LeMitzrayim, there were 69. But in Mitzrayim, that entered Mitzrayim, because at the other end of the door, there were 70. It was 70. Amazing. Okay, but we know that from that point of the Knisa LeMitzrayim until the Yetzia LeMitzrayim, that was the Redu Shanim, it's 210 years. And we know that we had Moshe Rabbeinu, as the Pasuk lists as being 80 years old at that time, which means that the mother must have been 130. So how do you explain that? How can you call her a child? So it was Leidata Mitzrayim Ein Horadata Mitzrayim. So how do you talk about a 130-year-old woman as a bat? Amar Rav Yehuda, it's another example of the same phenomena that is so central as Masechet. She got turned back into a bat. Noldubo Simanei Narut. This is Mamish, the Lashon that we find by Sora Imenu, like the Gemara says, Nitaden Abasar, Nit Pashtu Akmatim, Chazar Hayofi Lemekoma, and so on. Unbelievable. So then it says, Vatahar Haisha Vateleit Ben. Now the problem is that she was already pregnant from before, as we're going to see. If she was already pregnant 3 months before her remarriage, so why does it say that she conceived? I mean, she was long ago conceived. Omer Rav Yehuda Bar Zvida, this is makish leidata lohorata. The only time that we find this lashon vatahar vateled throughout Tanakh is by nashim tzidkaniyot, and that's coming to tell me that just like horata shelo b'tzar, it compares conception to birth as if there was nothing that was painful at all about the entire process. Now remember that the Zohar makes the same comparison of the case of the Ishaki Tazria Vialda. So that's the same thing in the Lashon of the Zohar, that from the moment of conception, the woman who's completely focused on the V'yalda Zachar as part of the Kiyum of Bris Mila and the Kiyum of Bris Shel Avraham Avinu, is exactly this Nakuda. And Mikan L'Nashim Sidkaniot Shelo Ayu B'Pitka Shel Chava. You would think that it's a universal situation, the way that the Torah describes the Klola on Chava in Gan Eden. We see from here, it is not necessarily universal. It's possible for a human being to go beyond Pitka Shel Chava, beyond all of these terrible things that were written down that are part of the pain of pregnancy and raising children and so on. It's possible to get out of that. And then it says that she saw Vatera Oto Kitovu. She saw that he was Tov. What exactly does that mean, Kitovu? Tanya, Rabbi Meir Omer, Tov means that she assigned him that name, that he's Tov. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, his name is actually Tuvia, as we see. So Tovya means a process of becoming Tov. Rabbi Nechemia Omer, Tov, that he was Ro'ui Linevius from the beginning. Acherim Omrim, he was no Lot Kishuhu Mahul. Now, as Tosis points out, there's a little bit of a problem. Because how do we have Rabbi Meir arguing on Acherim if Acherim is Rabbi Meir? So, Tosis brings an amazing pshat, which is that actually he saw that the idea of calling Rabbi Meir Acherim, he saw this in some kind of, he doesn't say exactly where, but it was some kind of French sefer, he says. Maybe it even came from Rashi, that everything that Rabbi Meir had learned from Elisha ben Avuya, who was called Acher, they called it Acherim Omri. So it was Rabbi Meir's translation of the Shitas of Acherim, because Elisha ben Avuya was called Acher, and there were many who didn't want to learn, you know, and they were upset that Rabbi Meir was learning from Acher, until finally there was the whole argument with the Shechina and with Eliyahu HaNavi, and that he was careful, and he threw out the shell, and he only got directly to the kernel. So anyway, so those things that he said is Rabbi Meir is Rabbi Meir. Those things that he was Mekabel from Acher are called Acherim. However, Tosfos doesn't go with that, shows places where it doesn't seem to be true. And he dines it, maybe it's very simple, that after they were Kuvea, the name, to the Acherim, so maybe the idea was over there that he said other Shmuis after they were, you know, after he had that political fight and the whole story where he went along with the political fight, with the replacement of the Nazi. Anyway, so they called him Acherim. So the things that he changed his mind later, he might have changed his mind. And they continued to quote that as Acherim. Okay, in any event, whatever the pshat is, very, very sweet that we have to deal with this issue here. All right, so the question is, was his name Tov? Was he Hogun for Nevius? And that she saw was Tov. Okay, those are different Shitas, and it could be if it was the same person, which is yet another example, according to Tosfos, of an individual who took on an entire new personality. Is he called Meir, or is he called Acherim? And we quote it as if they're completely different people. So even within the Man D'Omrim, we have the same phenomena that we had of the people in the Masechet. So this was Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Nechemia, the Chachamim Eimrim, that B'Shah Shenolad Moshe, Nitmale HaBayit Kulo Or, because this was Vatera Oto Kitovu, and Vayar Lohim Eto Or Kitov. And then what does it say? After it says Kitovu, Vatitzpeneu, which is the Or Dagonus, exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did when he saw Vayara Or Kitov. So what did he do? Omad V'Gyaneza. So she too was Vatitzpeneu. So she hid Moshe Rabbeinu. And indeed, afterwards, when Moshe Rabbeinu was Zecha to Karnei Or, those Karnei Or that everybody saw, was the Or Agonos that she had hidden inside Moshe. Unbelievable. So the entire thing goes back all the way to Maisa Bereshis, to the Kiyum of Bereshis, and to the difference between Ani El Shaddai and the difference between Shmi Hashem Lo Nodati Lehem, and how that becomes clear through Moshe, and that's the getter of the Ne'emanos, and it's brought out by Miriam, and becomes the Zechus of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and a heck of a lot more that we still have to talk about, but which we'll have to put off for some reason. Okay. So, Tichvenei Shlosha Yerachim. But wait a minute. The reason over here was because Lomono Mitzrayim Mishad Hadr. The Mitzrim, they only started counting the 9 months of her pregnancy, knowing that these Jews only slept together when they were married. So they see this guy marrying this young girl, who is, of course, Yocheved. Little did they suspect that she was pregnant before the marriage. I mean, that doesn't happen with these holy Jews. So they only started counting her time for delivery from the marriage, right? So she had 3 months that she got away with murder because they didn't suspect her of being pregnant. This is curious because remember, Rashi says the reason she was able to hide him for 3 months, he doesn't use this Gemara, he uses a different pshat in the Medrash, that she gave birth at 6 months and they waited till 9 months. Okay. But over here, the Gemara is saying that they counted and therefore lo yachla odat spino. At this point, they suspected that she had a child. So I don't get it. I mean, if he was already 3 months old, they didn't have somebody there when she gave birth because they missed the birth by 3 months. So why can't she keep hiding him? So let her continue hiding him. Like, how could they find out? Did they have radar, you know, or deep peeking radar to find out where they would hide babies? Well, how could they have known where they would hide babies? Ah, says the Gemara, they didn't have radar, but they had Richie's sonar. What kind of sonar? They used sound waves. What they would do is they would bring in Egyptian babies and pinch them till they started screaming. Now, when a baby hears another baby crying, that's very much stimulating the cries of that baby. So then they used their sonar to identify where they were hiding the Jewish babies. Aha! And so, because of that, that way they would bring babies in. And they would bring Mamta Yanuka also. And that way they would get the Egyptian babies, even in on the act of exposing. This is like a real Nazi tactic, can you imagine? Wow. And this is Merumas in the Pasuk that says, Echazulanu Shualim. Shualim Ketanim Echablim Kramim. They got even these little foxes. These were the same foxes that we saw Shimshon utilized, right? So these shualim, these mamzerim of these mitzrim, they utilize their own babies to be mechabel, the kerem Hashem tzavakas, which is Klal Yisrael, and the shualim kitanim were mechablim, those kramim. Unbelievable. Beautiful. Okay. Then it says, she takes a tevat gomer. So, I mean, why would she use gomer? Gomer is like really not very strong stuff, you know? I mean, she could have made him like a really much stronger and safer kind of basket. Omar Rabbi Elazar, yeah, but gomer is cheap, you know? And mikamat tzadikim shimamonam chaviv alayim yoter migufam. Tzadikim are always careful not to waste any money, you know? So if she could utilize goma, why should she buy something more expensive? So in other words, the same way that we find the story, remember that Gabi has taken a stavka to the children of Choni HaMa'agel, and we learned from them, it's better to get your knees scraped than to get your pants scraped. You know, pants cost money. And knees fix themselves. Same idea. Okay, you know. So what's going to happen? It'll get a little scratch. New mamela. So we should pay a lot of money up front. Man, it doesn't make sense. Doesn't have to show me life, literally, or life. Why are they so machshiv money? Because the money is really theirs. Nobody else has money that's theirs. It's all windfalls, fake outs, cheating customers. Businesses with advertisements that are a bunch of bull. not returning money when you should. So the money is easy come, easy go. So if it's easy come, easy go, then you don't care about how much money you spend. Take a look at these people going to these Florida hotels, you know, $5,000 a person for Pesach, for just to be tortured in a hotel for Pesach to remember the Tsar of Mitzrayim, what it was like to be an Eved. Okay, it's a lot of money to pay just to relive the pain of Mitzrayim, to be in a Florida hotel. But if money doesn't mean anything, no, you can even pay that kind of money. But for tzaddikim, every penny counts because this is my money. It's like that first dollar bill that you post on the wall, the first buck I made. And this is really me. So because they're not peshit yedeim, b'gezela, that's why they care about the money. Reb Shmuel Bar Nachmani says, listen, it's a much better reason to use a wicker basket, you know, because no matter what material you use, if that material can be broken, you never know what's going to happen. But if you're using a soft material, nothing's going to happen. Because the softer something is, the more pliable it is, the more likely it is to survive the worst of storms. Because all that's going to happen, and this is the difference between the early bumpers that they used to put on cars made out of steel, you know, then you could trust the bumper. Yeah, except when it was a big bump. Then you couldn't do nothing. Mashenke nowadays, they use junk for bumpers. But the point of the junk is that it's the kind of plastic that can pop in and be popped out. And that's like using a tevas goma, exactly the same idea. So it's more protective, not less protective, even though it's junkier. So she used the dover rach, she yachol lamod bifnei dover rach, u bifnei dover kasher. Hafochba de kulaba. You'd think that those anti-Semites at Ford could have analyzed the Gemara first. No, not a chance. Fine. So then it says that she covered it bechemar ubezafet. Chemar bevifnim. So the clay part, that was on the inside. But zefet was on the outside. Kedesh lo yariach oto tzadik reach ra. Now, it's a beautiful pshat in Tosfos. This doesn't mean on the outside of the basket, because the whole point of using this material for the basket is as camouflage. If you're going to be using reeds for a basket and you're putting it into a place of reeds, so then it's going to be invisible. And that's much safer for the baby. And therefore, it means inside and outside means both were inside the basket, but one was on the bottom, that was the tar, to waterproof it. And then on the inside, meaning between the baby and the waterproofing, then there was material that was chemar, which was nice soft clay, which was memory foam. So she lined it with memory foam on top of the waterproofing. Perfect. That way, we wouldn't have Moshe Rabbeinu smelling the reach of the tar. Vatosem batayelen, vatosem basuf. So she put the child into the basket, and she put the basket into the suf. This suf is actually the yam suf. So she put it into a place where it was stuck and wouldn't just float away, and it was inside an area where it was full of suf. Reb Shmuel Bar Nachmani Omer, it means an agam. She put it not into a yam, she put it into a swamp, basically. So kedichtiv, kone vasuf kamelu. Because we see that the pasuk compares the kone, which is obviously reeds, and suf must be a type of reed, right? So it's a suf. Kamelu, both of them will wither, says Yeshayahu. But the point is that she put it in a place where the water was not moving around. So vatere bat paro lirchotz al hayor. What does that mean, al ha-yor? Omri b'yokan b'shum re b'shum bar yochai. The yor, remember, was the Avodah Zarah of Mitzrayim. So she went down to wash herself of the tomb of Avodah Zarah. It means she yorda l'rchotz b'gilulei aviyah. She wanted to get away from her father and her father's ridiculous beliefs in order to become a giyoret and to keep Sheva Mitzvahs b'nei noyach. V'cheinu emer, imrachatz Hashem et so'at, Benot Zion, Well, they were talking about when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will wash away all of the Avodah Zorah of Klal Yisrael, Beruach, Mishpat, that's obviously specifically Keneged Avodah Zorah and Hevel. And then it says, V'naharotea holchot. What do you mean holchot? What do we care that they, the Naharotea were Davka holchot along the Yam? Well, who cares? Reb Yochanan, no. When it says they were holchot, this is not just plain Alicha. This is Alicha, which means they're on their way to be killed. V'cheinu omer, hinei anochi holech lamut. So it teaches us that they tried to stop her from saving Moshe. So look at the story. So when they saw, even the Chazar, the Chazar, that boy Slatsuli the Moshe, and they see Paro's own daughter, who's going to be taking this Moshe, and it was immediately recognizable that he was Jewish. Amrullah, so they said to her, excuse me, madam princess, but you know, minagon shel olam, that if a melech boss of Adam is gozer exera, even if you can't get everybody in the country to listen, at least his own family have the decency to be Mekayim their father's Gezerah. And you, Ba'ato Verta Gezerat Avicha, you're supposed to be drowning all the Jewish children, and here you had this great opportunity, and instead of drowning him, you're Mekayim him? Ato Verta Gezerat Avicha, at that moment, Gavriel came and smashed them all into the ground and killed them. That handled that problem. So then when it says, Vatishlach et amata, Vatikachas. First of all, what is amata? There's two ways of understanding the word amata. Amata could mean her arm, or it could mean her shivcha, et ha'ama, right? Now the truth is, it's not so pashut, because there's a different nikud between an ama as her arm, and ama as her shivcha, in terms of the dagesh. However, there's a lot of discussion about this issue, and whether we can use that as a raya for which it was. So, chad amar shivchata, and chad amar yada. So, mandi amar yada. It says, amata, ama is a way of talking about stretching out your arm. Mandi amar shivchata. I mean, where do we ever find using ama instead of just saying the simple word, stretch out your hand? But when we talk about your whole arm, is that the point? I thought you said that they were all killed. You said Gavriel came and smashed them. And now you're saying that actually they were there. Nah, Gavriel couldn't kill all of them because it wouldn't be correct to leave a princess without a Filipino, would it? So therefore, he smashed all of them but one. And she alochada, but that one would be pretty careful, you'd think, about what she would say after witnessing everything else that went wrong. So because of that, he left her one because it's not derech eretz of a bat malka, lemekam lechuda. And if it says, it means yada, why not say yada for heaven's sakes? Oh, that's the whole beauty. It's teaching us something amazing. Vishtarve vishtarvuve. It's the ama, the measurement of the arm, that kept getting longer and longer. So she sent out the ama, exactly. So it's teaching us the Omar Mar. Remember that when we talked about Achashverosh. So it says that he took the special scepter that he had, right? And that he gave it, he stretched it out to Esther. So we darshan over there that he actually miraculously it kept going until it went all the way to Esther. Vatiga b'rosh ha-shavit. So we learned from there that it was ishtarve v'ishtarvuve. And there it ends up saying, and that's the same thing that happened with Bat Paro. Oh, that's referring to this, to Amata. And that's the same thing that happened to Og Melech HaBashan with Shinei Rishaim. Dichtiv Shinei Rishaim Shibarta. What does it mean when it says Shibarta? It means, as Rish Lakish says, you ended up stretching those teeth out, which is why we call a plumber who keeps adding pieces of pipe to pipe a shrav rav, based on Og Melech HaBashan in modern Hebrew. Come on, these are such fun things. Nobody smiles ever. I don't know. You know, maybe we should have Gavi go again to Choni Amagel, who gave up when nobody smiled at him and his pshatim, just to reassure him it's worth living anyway. What do you say, Gavi? He may not even be listening. Even Gavi may not be listening. He may not even have his headphones, his earphones in. Sure enough, even Gavi's not listening. So what are you going to do? I'm going to ask somebody else to go to Choni Amagel. I'll have to work it out myself. Vihine, vatiftach vatirehu et hayeled. Now, you've got to admit, that's a very strange phraseology. It should say, vatiftach vatireh et hayeled. What do you mean? She opened it up. She sees him. Who? Et hayeled. What does that mean? Om Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina is referring to two completely different things. She saw him, meaning she saw the Shechina imay. And then she saw the Shechina together with the Yelet. That's the point. Now, this is a little bit strange, because the Shechina is always Loshen Nekeva. Or it's Vatirehu, right? So Rabbeinu Bachya explains that this is a reference to the shame of who? Ho, ani v'ho shiana. And that shame, hey vav, vatirehu, is a reference to elements of the Shechina, which indeed is feminine. V'hinei na'ar boche. So, wait a minute. Before it said that he was a yelet, right? And she recognizes a yelet, b'yaldei ha'ivriyim, vatirehu et ha'yelet. And now he's a na'ar. Make up your mind. Was he a yelet or was he a na'ar? Tana, so the Braita said, yes, he was definitely a yelet, but when he was crying, he sounded like he was already a grown-up or a teenager. So says the Rabbi Yehuda. Umalu Rabbi Nechemya. So then if that's the case, you're turning Moshe Rabbeinu into a Balmum? Somebody, even though he's a Levi, but a Levi is possible if there's something wrong with his voice. And if you got a Levi who's got an inappropriately deep voice for being a Nar, remember one of the beauties of the Levian is that they would call them the Tzare Alevian because they were able to be sopranos and they could reach heights that others couldn't reach. And now you're telling me that Moshe Rabbeinu, his voice was already broken at that point. I mean, so then how is he going to be Moshe Rabbeinu with a mum? He's not even Roy for Sanhedrin if you have a mum. So how it couldn't be the pshat. It means something much more poignant. He was a Nahar because she found in the cradle with him a chuppah that said, Kol Sosain v'kol Simcha. She sees that his mother had made him a miniature chuppas nu'urim because she said, Shema lo eskele chuppato. If I don't make it and the child doesn't survive in a way that I can be at his chuppah, I'll make him his chuppah now. So that at the time, if he makes it, he'll have his mother's presence at his chuppah. Very beautiful, poignant idea. Vatachmol alav. Vatomer miyaldei ha'ivrim zeh. So how exactly was she chomelet alav? And knew right away that it was miyaldei ha'ivrim. Inayana. Omer b'yezib rebechanina shirata oto mohul. She saw that he was mohul. It's a little bit strange because he was born Mohu. So if he had been a guy, he had also been born Mohu, no? Ask yourself that. Are Goyim ever born Mohu? That's a question. Well, according to the NIH, the only reports we have of being Nolad Mohu are all of Jews and Muslims. Anyway. So she said, Mialdei Ivrim ze. Why does she say ze? She should say who? Mialdei Ivrim who? Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Milamed Shenitnaba Shalomi Da'ata. She was saying in Avias, which is that the moment that this child was put into the suf, that was the end of the gezeras against the children in Mitzrayim, because that enabled the Itztagnine Paro to stop seeing the sign that the water didn't affect him. Remember, their whole vision was, he's going to be Lokoi B'mayim. They didn't know that the Lokoi B'mayim means the Mayim at the end, that it really was Lokoi in, which is the Mei Meriva. But they thought he was going to be drowned. So when they he's got this sense that the water already took him, which was why his mother put him into the water, that this would be the last child that would have to face that. That's why she said, Zeh. Zeh nofel, ve'en acher nofel. Little did she realize that the very thing that just happened would be the end of the problem, because Moshe Anshel Yisrael, in the presence of Moshe, would now show up on their screens as having been thrown into the water. V'hainu the Omar Rabbi Elazar, my dichtiv, v'chiyomru alechem d'shul ha'ovot ve'el ha'yidonim. So what in the world does Yeshayahu mean when he says, well, the of the Avodah Zarah, they all say, why don't you go and find out the future? What do you need Nevi'im for? You can go to Ovot and Yidonim. Hamitzaf Tzafim v'amagim. These guys, they're constantly chirping. They're chirping. They're like AIs. Yeah, they have no idea what they're talking about. You know, it could be true, could be not true. It's just noticing patterns. Doesn't have any sense of reality or knowing what they're looking at. They're tzofim, the enemy odim matzofim. They may look at things and see patterns, but there's no intelligence in it, so they can't really explain it. Magim, they make these bird sounds, but it doesn't have any meaning in any real sense. What do they have? They've got this vague sense that water is going to spell the end of Moshe. And of course, he was born by the water. I mean, the original birth, Bishagamu Basar, was by the marble. So his whole story was about the water, right? So they had this sense, okay, they were all made of a geyser. But when she had put Moshe into the water, given to Shadula Moshe, they came to power and they said, well, that simon disappeared. Apparently, he was already loka. The whole thing had nothing to do with real water. It had to do with the Meimeriva. What do you mean, Hema? As if we know all about them. We knew all about them. Hema, Sherau, it's Tagnine, Paro, Vitau. That's exactly now we know what it was referring to. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu said to Klal Yisrael later, Sheish meot elef ragli ha'am asher ani betocham. Why does he say ha'am asher ani betocham? Because he was trying to tell them, listen, all you guys, you're all here today because of me, okay? I saved all your necks by being thrown into the water. Have a little akaras teva, you know? So, okay, so bishvili nitzaltem kuchem. And that's the zeh. Rabbi Chanina bar Papa Eimer, that day when Moshe Rabbeinu was put into the water was the 21st day of Nisan. And that was the day that is coming up tomorrow night. And that's the day of Yom Suf. And that's why he was put into the Yom Suf. Exactly. Because that was the place where that schus was going to take place. And that's why the Malachi Hashore said, Ribono Shel Olam, here's where the Shira Sayam is going to come. Say he should die on this day, being thrown into the Yam. Because of that, he survived. What is that trefa stuff? Now, first it's the Mayim Ma'orim. Now it's Mechomet. Who knows? Rabbi Acha Bar Chanina said, no, it was the sixth day of Sivan. And the Malachi Ashari said, Ribbono Shel Olam, Mi Sha'atid Lekabel Torah Mehar Sinai B'Yom Zeh, Yilakeh B'Yom Zeh. Now, wait a minute. We have external ways of determining whether it was the sixth of Sivan. I mean, if you're telling me it's the sixth of Sivan, okay, it makes sense. Because that way you can work out 3 months between Moshe's birth, which we happen to know was B'Shiva B'Adar, and between the Titzpaneo Shlosha Yerachim. Okay, so you have enough time between Shiva Ba'adar and Shisha B'Sivan. Those are the 3 months that she managed to hide him. But if you're telling me, because B'Shiva Ba'adar made, B'Shiva Ba'adar nolad, as it says in the Braita, the Omar Mar, and B'Shiva Ba'adar at Shisha B'Sivan is exactly that amount of time, right? This is Tlata Yarchai. So it's precisely 3 months. But if you're telling me this happened on the 21st day of Nisan, from Shiva Ba'adar to the Chof Aleph Ben Nisan, you do not have 3 months. I got news for you. And therefore, you wouldn't be able to be Mekayim, but it's Bnei Shlosha Yerachim. Ah, says the Gemara, little did you know that there was another Sheni that year. Gives us an extra month. So there you go. So if you have the entire, I mean, except for the first 7 days, you know, you've got the entire Adar Rishon. You've got the entire Adar Sheni. And you got almost the entire next month, which is Nisan, 21 days. Man, come on. We could count that as 3 months, don't you think? Okay, so that's the Shlosha Yerachim. Now, his sister comes along and says to Bat Paro, should I call you a nursemaid from the Jewish women? Now, why in the world would she say that? That's a crazy thing to say. What's wrong with getting in a... Please mute, Dvorah. So, obviously, there must have been a reason why she was offering to get Dafka, a Jewish woman. Maishna mi'ivriyot, milamitshir ziru l'moshav kol ha-mitzirot kulam. That this princess, Bitya, was going nuts. She could not find anyone to nurse Moshe. Every single nursing mother of Mitzrayim that she tried to get him to nurse from, he refused to be yonek. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Pesh Atid Adaberim HaShchina, Yinak Davar Tamei. I'm not going to allow him to be metame his mouth on the breasts of these goyish women. V'haynu dechtiv. Et mi yoredeya, vet mi yavin shmua. Who is the one that's going to teach? Meaning Moshe Rabbeinu. Dafke gmulei michalav, atikei mishadayim. So it was Moshe who refused to drink from any sources that weren't completely tahor. So Bat Paro says, go, lechi. And then it says, vatelecha alma. Why is the 5-year-old Miriam now referred to as this young teenage racer? How did that happen? She went like an Olympic racer to get her mother. Reb Shmuel Bar Nachmini Amar, Ha'alma means She'elima et Vareha. That obviously she was very careful to pretend to be a stranger who had just happened by so that it wouldn't come out that this whole thing was a kiyun of the Nevi'ahs that she herself had. What's this means that Bitya was saying a Nevi'ahs. Not that she knew it, but she was saying, this child is yours. Ha shalichi, take back that which is yours. I'll pay whatever it costs to nurse him. It's not enough that Tzadikim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, make sure that they get back that was taken from them. They pay them. Pay you for taking it back. You know, you were going to be the mother who was going to have to nurse him. We'll pay you for nursing him. Why should you have to take the trouble? Amazing.